Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the live from Arizona, live from Baseball HQ, live from here we are, the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Vlad Sedler. I am joined today by a wonderful young man, younger than many of us here, from Fantasy Pros, formerly of Sports Ethos. He is everywhere and very much on our Twitter and our X, a rising star, if you will, Joe Errico. Joe, what's up, man?
Thank you. Vlad, I really appreciate you asking me to do this with you. It was fun doing the show with you and Jason a couple months ago, and it's a cool experience to be doing a live podcast. Like I said to you earlier, I've probably done like 700 rough podcasts, something like that, but never live. So it's a bit of a different experience, but this should be a lot of fun.
So talk about work ethic. I've probably been in the industry 10 years more than Joe has, and he has for sure done more podcasts than me. So that's impressive.
The nature of doing a daily show, they just add up. They just add up.
And speaking of adding up, I don't know if this really is that, but dude, you're an absolute trooper for joining us, despite the fact that you are, and I'm sorry to share your personal business, but most people know, you're literally passing kidney stones as we speak.
The industry needed a flu game, and I figured I would be the one to step up for that one. But yeah, no, I spent all day Wednesday in the hospital. I was thinking it was not going to be wise to spend 5 hours on a plane, but they told me there was nothing life-threatening. So I figured if it wasn't going to kill me, then I'd still make it out to Arizona.
Listen, man, you lasted through a whole season of the Blue Jays this year. I think you'll be able to get through anything. So
yeah, coming from the Dodger fan here, I'm sure. Yeah, up there at the top, it's nice looking down on everybody. But yeah, Toronto. I mean, I wore the jersey to rep them, but I don't really claim them right now for sure. They're a bit of a mess.
Speaking of the Dodgers, are there any Dodgers fans here? I know we've got some anti-Dodger fans here, but are there any? Or am I celebrating by myself today? Yes, Jeff, of course, Jeff. Mike, somewhat. I'm really excited. I'm personally excited about this championship because, I don't know, for some reason, the 2021, I don't really remember it. It was, you know, the COVID year. We didn't have a parade celebration. Like, yeah, I remember it. And of course, you got everybody telling me, reminding me that it wasn't like a true championship because it was a partial season, even though it really was. But for me, this is really the most meaningful one since 1988. And that was, you know, I was a kid. I was 9 years old. I remember that that game one, the Kirk Gibson shot against Eckersley really well because, you know, my moniker on Twitter is Rotogut. And y'all might not believe me, but I swear to you, that Kirk Gibson home run was my first ever true gut moment. I came back from my first ever hockey game, you know, 9 years old. And I knew Gibson, like, you know, was hobbling. He just probably wasn't going to play. And I just remember before the game started, wouldn't that be something if he just won the game? He just came up, you know, when they need him, just won the game with like a home run or a grand slam. So anyways, that was that. Fast forward to, you know, exactly, 36 years later to Freddie Freeman hitting that home run at the exact same day, exact same minute. 36 years later, so for me, that's just, you know, additional proof that there's just something special about baseball, something really magical.
Yeah, there's these little happenstance coincidence type of things. Now, Nestor Cortez is not Dennis Eckersley, but it was still, the parallels were eerily similar down to the hobbled leg and everything. It was like a carbon copy, essentially, if you look at the tape.
Yeah, and so now we go into the next season defending the championship. We'll see who else we've got up our sleeves. We do need a shortstop. Maybe we'll get a little Willie Adames action. We'll see if Sasaki is going to post if he wants to join the boys out west. So
let's hope not.
We'll see. We'll see. It's going to be a really fun preseason here, or, you know, off season here with all the signings. We've already got some stuff happening today, right?
Yep. There's been a couple of little deals. Even yesterday, Jorge Soler got traded. Maybe that was 2 days ago. Jorge Soler being traded for Griffin Canning, and then there was a bunch of opt-ins and opt-outs today. Garrett Cole opted out. Cody Bellinger opted in. So we're getting going. Now the World Series is done. Now we can start having some fun.
And we're here live, obviously, in Arizona, in the heart of, I guess, draft season's already begun. We've got like 15 draft champions, 50 round DCs, NFBC drafts already on the board. So we've got ADP data. We've got a bunch of live drafts happening here this weekend. Got the XFL draft is happening right now at this time. Some DCs and some gladiators tonight. Are you doing anything, Joe?
It's the first year. This is my third year at FPAS, and it's the first year I didn't do any drafts. I wanted to. It takes up so much time. Not that I don't want to do them, but I just didn't want to take 3 hours away or 2.5 hours, whatever it is, away from the shooting the breeze, going to podcasts, and different things like that. Really my favorite thing to do here. Like I go to a couple games, but I really come for the friendship element of it. You know?
Yep. Same here for sure. So we are going to talk about a few fun things. We're going to do some player comparisons. We've got a little bit of analysis on just early season drafting, like when we're drafting this early, the things we want to be careful about. And then we got a fun little trivia game at the end. We do have a couple of buzzers here that we borrowed from Mr. Sam and from the Palazzo podcast. So it will not be a family feud, but it will be a trivia game. Last year, this show had the Battle of the Quants. And that was, I guess I didn't set up the scoring very well because I think, the winning team won -13 to -11. So did a little bit better with the scoring system this year. But so we'll get into all that. Housekeeping wise, really, it's just the draft guide, the FTN draft guide will be coming out in mid-December. It'll be my fourth year managing that. And we'll have some fun, cool surprise guests. I wanted to shout out my colleague, Lucas Beery, in the house here, FTN. Did incredible work this year and in the preseason draft guide and in-season content and just grinding those hitting rankings all year. That's obviously no easy task. So thanks, Lucas, for being here. And then we're gonna have a bunch of cool new things, some fun tools, custom tools that we're building that are new for this season. We're gonna improve our projections process both in season and preseason. And then just, a little pat on the back on the side of preseason projections. And this is, again, not like a player-by-player analysis, but just on the, VDP, FTN VDP projections and where they landed on 5x5 roto category accuracy versus the 4 or 5 public systems that you see on Fangraphs. We were the best out of all those. So that's just on the early end. We're going to keep grinding on that. So that's it. Let's get to the good stuff. We're going to talk right now a little bit about the dangers of early ADP, how we best navigate in this like nascent market setting. So I don't know. Why don't you start us off on this topic?
Well, the thing with ADP data right now is that we put so much stock into it, and a lot of the numbers we see now, things will change, of course, injuries and roles changing and everything like that, but we see a number now and it kind of gets stuck in our head. A guy's going pick 32. Okay, so now in our brains, that player is at pick 32 or 33, whatever. But a lot of the people who are drafting right now are drafting to kind of scratch an itch because they want to get into a room. They see everybody's drafting again. But I think for the majority of people drafting right now, it is just not just for fun because there's money on the line, but it's not a fully thought out process yet of who is good to fade, who are we targeting, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like there is kind of – you kind of have to avoid reading too much into what you're seeing right now in terms of the ADP, but also it does give you a bit of a chance to kind of jump into some of those early rooms and take advantage of some of the numbers that are maybe a little bit skewed right now because people are just jumping into rooms and I like this guy. I'm hitting that guy because people – I mean a lot of people – I know I haven't done a full evaluation yet. The season just ended a few days ago. So I feel like we're kind of working on incomplete data right now based on the ADP.
Yeah, I mean, just from when NFBC ADPs started, when drafts started, 2 weeks ago, like where Giancarlo Stanton was going, the 250 ADP, all of a sudden he has a nice postseason. You're probably going to see a few round bump. There's just so much volatility right now. And it's really hard for everyone, especially us, many in this room who are, what's the word I'm looking for? Experienced players. You spend a lot of time on this. You know what you're doing. But even it doesn't matter how good you are. It's very easy to be affected by bias and also to be skewed by seeing early ADP. Like you might just start to see a guy going in a certain range, and even though you know consciously you shouldn't be accepting this as fact because you have a different opinion. It somewhere in your subconscious, it's starting to build in like, oh, well, that's the price or that's where it should be going. I think the most organic way to do this is it's really tough. I think most of us don't have the time. A lot of us don't have the resources. But like if you just don't look at ADP early on and you kind of set your own rankings or you at least put a few things together so that you kind of have an idea of where you think players should go. So then when you compare it to the market prices, where ADP currently is, you know who you like much better or much worse than the field. And of course, there's the fact that so much is going to change, and yeah. It's going to be so every little news, tidbit, signing, these things are going to move the needle greatly for so many of these players, especially those that are further along down the lines of ADP.
Yeah, like we mentioned Griffin Canning earlier. He got traded from a terrible situation to a team that just revived a career of a pitcher last year. Obviously, Chris Sale and Griffin Canning are very different, but you know, that career revitalization that can happen from a trade, a pitcher who does have some raw talent. I know it was a bit of a tough year for him, but yeah, Griffin Canning, I'd be shocked if he doesn't jump up at least, you know, a few rounds just based off of that trade alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also the people that are in these early drafts, and some of you may be in this room right now, I mean, you're setting the market, and it's such a small sample. We've got like 15 drafts now, and you'll see massive min maxes, like these huge ranges on these players right now. And you've got a lot of the same people drafting in these drafts. So, you know, for example, we got Chef Mike here, and say Chef Mike is in four DCs and he really has to have, you know, Ian Happ. And we all value Ian Happ as somebody going 150, but he keeps taking him at 100. That ADP right now is closer to 100. It's a bit of a, you know, it's being skewed by Mike's personal, you know, take on Ian Happ, which, hey, maybe he exceeds that 100 ADP.
Yeah, that's definitely something, and, you know, just going back to what I said initially, take them with a grain of salt, these particular numbers. If you are jumping into a draft room, don't be beholden to that early ADP. If you like a player, and you've done, especially if you've done the full analysis, because I said most people haven't, but there are people who are keeping spreadsheets throughout the year, doing early rankings. Some of you might have already done your initial evaluation process, and you might have a better idea than, you probably do have a better idea than the majority of the room where players should be going, or at least a general range of where players should be going.
Yeah. And then, so like, when is your ideal time to start drafting? Like, do you need to have your rankings, your first initial ranking set before you jump in? Or what is it that triggers you to start getting into the 50-round draft champions?
The last couple of years, it was just coming down here and seeing everybody drafting. I was like, okay, I'm gonna draft too. Now, I think this year, after a couple of years of experience in the NFBC, I probably want to have at least initial rankings down. I mean, I might hop into a Gladiator or two just to kind of explore the player pool. And just for, I mean, we love drafting, right? That's a huge part of it. We love to just hop into the room and hit the draft button. So I'll probably end up doing that before I should. But realistically speaking, I think it's best practice to have at least your initial set of rankings done. It doesn't have to be, you know, full 700 players or whatever, but a top 200, top 250 roughly. And so probably that'll happen somewhere mid-November, maybe early December. I'll hop into a draft if I can help myself. I'll probably hop into one before then. But that's when I should probably start, is mid-November, December range, I think.
And there's so much to be said about how draft champions and draft and holds are really strong prep as well.
Yeah.
Because it's a slow draft. You're working with a two-hour clock on your pick, and you have a chance to really spend time and decide how you want to build your team. You get a feel for where the drop-offs are in ADP or position, where you want to take pitchers, where you want to go for closers. So I think all that is really valuable. And I think there's a strong, you know, we've been talking about it for years, but that's a very strong form of research, because you're studying on the go. And as you're drafting, you're learning things and figuring things out, or finding out maybe something, you know, we haven't all done a full deep dive on everything that's been in 2024, because it's all so fresh. But we're just kind of learning along the way, and things that could move the needle for us for or against players.
It's also good to battle test your rankings once you have an initial set, and then you hop into a room and you got two players that are ranked closely together. The guy that you know, have the gut instinct to draft first should probably be drafted, or should probably be ranked ahead. And I've had that happen each of the last couple of years. You're in a room, you got ranking set out. I have this guy ranked higher than that guy. I should draft him, but I don't want to. So then that helps you to set your own rankings as well. I think that's a huge part of it for me, is before I'm really truly certain about any rankings, whether it's pitcher, overall, anything, I need to hop into a room and just see if that actually plays out once the draft is rolling.
Yeah, and there's also so much to be said about those that are, who are ready, drafting in, you know, getting, jumping into and just starting to draft early. Because you're just in full season-long baseball mode, and you don't have any time in between. You're not getting into football. You don't have any other distractions. If you're ready, you don't have to be ready per se, but if you're ready to just jump in and spend the time on it, it's worth it. Because what we've seen over the last few years is, not always, but many times, the winners of these huge 5,000 plus team competitions, the draft champions, are coming from these October, November drafts, because you're never going to get these type of deals. You know, like our sponsor of this pod, of the FTN pod, Underdog Fantasy, the same thing with the best balls, right? Those that are drafting early, you're never going to get those deals again. On the flip side, the players who are end up injured or go for Tommy John and things like that, you're kind of screwed in that respect.
The market is so inefficient right now, and you see it especially with pitchers. Pitchers will move up dramatically. And I think if you want to build those teams, especially if you want to build some pitching heavy teams, it's a great time to hop into a draft room. We're going to talk about some guys coming back from injury that are going fairly late. Even Garrett Crochet is somebody that's kind of been going fairly late. I know we didn't have him on the outline, but he's going in like the 7th, 8th round. I think it was yesterday. It was a Gladiator. Eric Halterman took him in like the 8th or 9th round. So if you want to get some of those bargains, I can guarantee you Garrett Crochet, especially if there is any kind of trade out of Chicago, he will not be going in the 9th round. So that's how you get some of those inefficient markets taken care of, is draft a couple teams now. And even, you know, kind of going back and forth there, should you draft now, shouldn't you draft now? I think it's good to mix it up. You know, you draft a couple, especially if you are like a lot of people in this room, you're not going to just draft one fantasy team. You're going to have 10, 12, 20, 30, 40, however many teams. Draft a few now, draft a few in December, and then you get to take advantage of the different stages of the market.
Yeah, and a couple of data points for the early draft winners. I personally am not a great DC player. If you look at my record, it's not that great. And not as an excuse, but part of the reason is my early few months of drafting is it is that trial and error process. It's testing out different builds. And, I'm maybe drafting guys I wouldn't typically draft. And so in 2019, I did have a good DC year. That was the year where Yu Darvish had a great deal and he was cheap. I got a Pete Alonso in like the 20th round. It was fantastic. But that's the year Lindy Hinkleman, he's the only two-time winner of the NFBC main event. He won the draft champions overall that year. He drafted his team in October. He did also get that 25th round Pete Alonso. He got the Darvish as well. He got it all done. And then if you were here for the presentation a couple of days ago here in Arizona, it was Toby DiPietro and Stephen Goodwin. They were talking about Stephen Weimer's perfect team, the main event. The draft champions. It's nearly a perfect team. I mean, it was 97% of all points available. This is like an Ohtani Judge team, but with Ketel Marte and anyone you can think of who broke out this year. Brenton Doyle's on that team, Brent Rooker. I mean, it was just a masterpiece. He drafted that in October. So full-time, year-round guys, strike while the iron's hot, because you're never going to get deals like this again.
Speaking of Steve Weimer, the first NFBC draft I ever did was here in 2022. It was a DC, and I did really well. I had like 109 points, and going through the year, I think, okay, I have a really good chance. Steve Weimer had 134 points in that league, or 133 points or something. So my 109 was not even close. I think he led 9 of the 10 categories, and the 10th one he was like second or third or something. It was just a ridiculous DC player. Ridiculous.
Yeah. 134 seems low for him.
Yeah. An off season.
Yeah. By the way, we were just talking about some of those profitable hitters this morning in the player spotlight panel. We discussed some of these guys. We're talking about late round profitable hitters. It's an article I write in the draft guide every year at FTN, comes out around mid-December. But one thing I looked at were, who were these massively profitable hitters? These are guys that were either not drafted or taken after ADP 250 who returned top 5 round value. So this is top 75 overall. And in 2024, there were 7. And maybe 2 borderline guys. And you guys probably know most of them. We mentioned a couple of them just now. Brent Rooker, Brenton Doyle, Jurickson Profar, mostly not drafted. Jackson Merrill, who was starting to get drafted over the last couple of weeks of the preseason when we realized he was going to make the Padres. Eugenio Suarez with the just heater, absolute heater. You were loving it if you had Suarez there. Matt Chapman, stealing bases, what? I mean, this is something. Zach Neto, by the way, he was kind of right on the bubble there, but man, he was incredible. He's somebody that I think a lot of us were on in during draft season, and I feel like there was a big lull on him as well. Like there was a period of time where we all loved Neto, and then we're like not so much into him. And then 2 more bubble guys, they were just outside the top 75. They're both taken past 250. Shea Bangaliers, incredible for the A's, and then Bryce Terang, steals galore. So Those were the seven guys that now all have new market prices. We were talking about them earlier. Brenton Doyle's going in the top 80. Brent Rooker's going in the top 80. Jackson Merrill's a top 35 guy right now. So something to keep in mind. If you look at 2023, who were those guys and where did their prices end up? So those guys who were ended up top 75 overall, who were, you know, drafted past pick 250, Lane Thomas was one. If you remember him from 2023, was awesome. Marcelo Zuna, Josh Lowe, Yandy Diaz, CJ Abrams, Justin Turner, Spencer Steer, Ha-Seong Kim, and Bryson Stott. Now, what does that list have in common? How many of those guys hit their profit, their break-even value?
I mean, it's a bust list, essentially. Ozuna was obviously there. Steer was there. CJ Abrams looked like he was going to get there, but he really tailed off in the second half. So it essentially functions as, you got to dig deep into this, but it's essentially an easy fade list for a lot of these guys, especially when you see the prices are just ridiculously jumping up. It's funny, Profar was going outside the top 250. He has this incredible season, and his ADP is 210 still. So people are still a little bit nervous about him. He's not jumping up. And for the majority of these guys, you're going to have to pay maybe not exorbitant prices, but I mean, Jackson Merrill in some rooms is going to be a second round pick, and people are going to have to decide if they believe in that. It's a little bit different for a younger player as opposed to a Chapman or a Suarez, but by and large, this is a list of players that you should probably be avoiding next year.
And the market is sharper. Like, the people that are drafting earlier, it gets better and better. And it's a mix of things, right? It's just experience. It's, you know, just like in tune with roster construction and the playoff pool. It's not as much of a Wild West as it used to be in previous years. So something that's really interesting. And anything else about these, you know, top 250 guys? We can get into who those might be later, or maybe, you know, throughout the preseason.
Brent Rooker is kind of an interesting one just because of the whole, he's utility eligible, but he'll probably gain outfield. And then there's also the ballpark change. He's going to be one where I think the price is going to jump all over the place. There'll be certain people who take Brent Rooker probably in the third round. But there was also, I think it was that early draft that DiPietro did where he didn't get drafted in the first like 10 rounds or something like that. So he is going to jump around. The UT thing is going to mess with some people's heads. But he'll be an interesting one to keep track of because I feel like the min and max on Brent Rooker is going to be all over the place.
So let's talk about some players that some comparisons, players of similar positions, players of similar fantasy output, or at least projected fantasy output, who we think, you know, kind of who our preferences are in a specific range. So, you know, kicking things off with like the end of the second round of a 15 teamer, early third round. You've got Rafael Devers, who is, you know, basically an every year second round guy. He's just always there. Sometimes he's available there at the end of the second round. During main event season, you're seeing pitchers pushed up. So occasionally you'll get somebody like a Devers pushed up beyond there. We've seen Pete Alonso in that spot, you know, recently. So you've got him. And then let's compare him to Matt Olson, who obviously had the down year. And then Austin Riley. By the way, fact that I just learned, I knew that Matt Olson in his first two seasons in Atlanta had played 162 games in each of those seasons. Does anyone know how many games he played in 2024? Let's throw out a guess. 162. Unbelievable. So a little bit of a down year for Matt Olson, especially considering he was an end of the first round, early second round pick. But where are you on those three? Do you have a preference? If they were all happen to be available at the end of the second round, who would, you know, what would you do there?
Going back to what we were just talking about real quickly, he was one of those cautionary tales, the guy that has the year that jumps him up, and then he kind of disappoints a little bit. So for me, I think Austin Riley is probably where I'm going to end up a lot of the time. Generally speaking, with Riley and Devers, if I am looking to take a third baseman in that 2-3 range, I mean, they've been more middle of the second round the last couple of years, but generally speaking, I'll just take whoever is still available to me. I think Riley is who I am going to lean more towards. Right now, the prices are very similar, but I could see Devers jumping him, even if it's only a few picks, just because he did play the whole season. He did have a fairly regular Rafael Devers season, where with Riley, 19 homers, 56 ribbies, he batted 256. I feel like you might be able to get a little bit more of a discount on him. You're also going to have ostensibly the Braves at full strength next year. Once we have Acuna back, Albies will be healthy. Hopefully Riley will be healthy. And I think that Riley is generally who I would go to among those three. But I wouldn't have a massive problem between him and Devers. Like, I feel like generally they are fairly similar, but Riley is who I slightly lean towards with the lineup protection.
I wonder what if there's going to be a little bit of a ADP slippage on Matt Olson. Like just thinking about it, he's the quintessential last year. You had so many people saying like, you know what, I just can't pay for this massive career year. We know he can hit 40 home runs. We know he's one of the best power hitters in the league. But the 14-15, it's a little too steep considering everyone's stealing bases these days, and he does not. He's obviously has to fit to a specific roster construction. But, you know, I'm just looking. I want to see what his current ADP is. Yeah, I mean, it's 33 right now through 13 DC drafts. It's a min of 23. It's a max of 55. And, you know, just want to point out that he's 1 year removed from 54 home runs and, you know, 140 RBI. And this is, you know, this past season, there was no Acuna. We lost Albies. Harris was out. It was just a broken year for them. I understand he steals no bases, but he is Mr. Reliable. We're talking in the car on the way to the game. We were like, how old? He must be like 32, 33. No, he's just going to turn 31 on basically what's going to be opening day. So, and just every single year, 700 plate appearances.
Yeah, he feels like he's been around for so long. He was 22 when he first made the show, so I guess it's just one of those where he was younger than I thought he was when he came up. So I thought he was easily into his, you know, pushing his mid-30s, but he's still only 30. The overall numbers, maybe part of it is because he played 162 games, but 29 homers, 98 ribbies. He batted .247, which is a disappointment in the context of he hit .283 the year before, but he's a .254 career hitter. He's always been kind of in this range, so it probably shouldn't be that disappointing. You got to figure a full season with hopefully everybody healthy. The counting stats are going to kind of rebound. The power metrics are still good. Lost a little bit of velocity. Lost a couple points on his barrel rate, but still really great numbers. So I wouldn't really have a problem with taking Olson there either, especially because, you know, it's been talked about and I haven't fully dug in yet. But first base is looking like it's going to be a fairly weak position, even potentially weaker than third base. So Olson, I could see that. And when you're going with any of these three guys, you are kind of sacrificing the speed. So it's good to either before or after you take them, kind of you have to at least think about getting a couple of steals guys, because these guys are all essentially zeros. You might get one or two, but that's a big problem with all three.
Yep. Yeah, and I think if you're looking at these guys in comparison to one another and you're trying to calculate the fact that Rafael Devers might get you 3 to 4 steals, I don't think that should really be part of the equation. I think it's, you need to kind of project how you think things will go for that team. Like, what's the team context? Who's the offense around them? Because, hey, listen, we learned the hard way with Jose Ramirez, or at least I did. Maybe you guys were in on it, but I remember the first pick of the second round when he was there, I always took an alternate option. Either there was a pitcher, or there was a hitter, or there was Yordan Alvarez, or always somebody. I always gave myself an excuse to not take Jose Ramirez. And I remember something that skewed me was his low home run and RBI total. Like, just in general, the Guardians didn't, you know, score a lot of runs that year. And so you were looking like, oh, he's kind of declining, you know, his RBI home run, you know, his counting cats are like in the 80s. And maybe that's just me, but I just felt like it was a silly way for me to sort of justify something that was based on a bias. And I don't know, that's not happening to Rafael Devers right now, but if you're looking at his, you know, this past season, he only played 138 games, still swatted 28 homers. He's hitting .270s as usual, but those counting cats were down. So he was in the 80s there. And if you expect things to be on the up and up in Boston, remember they weren't spending last year, but yeah, if you know, Trevor Story's there for a full year, you got Cassis back, like all the things we were expecting to happen the beginning of last year before everyone got hurt, you get those guys in the mix in the AL East, I think, you know, things could be good. He can be that, obviously without the 40 stolen bases, but, you know, a guy that could potentially, you know, be the 120, you know, RBI type guy.
You weren't wrong, by the way, like with the Ramirez thing, it's a hard offense to project year in and year out. They do bounce around. If you look at his numbers the last 3 years, he's played 157, 156, 158. The RBIs are 126, 80, 118. So it's a very tough team to really know what they're going to be offensively year in and year out. So you don't take any fault for that. Like, that's something that a lot of people were doing. I think with Ramirez, you were projecting a lower offensive environment for the team. They had a good year, but it happens.
Yep. And also, when someone, you know, you ask me now, like, who do you prefer of those three? I can't tell you exactly, and I feel like it's a disservice to tell you exactly right now. Like, why do I have to, in early November, lock in on a guy? You know, maybe I'm drafting a DC in early December and I'll have a, you know, I might prefer a share here and then kind of switch it up there. So I think it's okay as long as we discuss everything that goes within the options of those players.
Yeah.
Another comparison here was Jazz Chisholm and O'Neal Cruz. So Jazz Chisholm is going like end of the second, early third also. He's now got the, you know, the third base eligibility. He's with the Yankees. And then him against O'Neal Cruz is a little bit of a higher ADP, bit of a disappointing season for him based on our expectations. And originally I was going to have Jackson Merrill in the list because then all three would have been eligible both in the infield and outfield. But as Joe, you reminded me, since NFBC hasn't transferred over their position eligibility, Jackson Merrill doesn't get that shortstop. He's just an outfielder.
Yeah, it's a shame. I don't think there's any chance really of him getting that back either. He's just going to be outfield only. But that's, I mean, considering what he did for you, you'd stick him anywhere and you'd be happy with it. But yeah, between Jazz and O'Neal Cruz, I think it's going to be fairly close. But I do think you have to lean towards, I mean, like you just said a minute ago, we don't need to fully have concrete opinions formed at this time because we haven't done the entire offseason worth of analysis. But assuming that Soto stays in New York, which is a big assumption, you have a great couple guys batting in front of him. Of course, you have that short porch in left field or in right field, excuse me, for the left-handed hitter that he is. He just went 24-40. You think of in a full season in New York, a 30-40 season with 100-100 is definitely doable. With Cruz, he hasn't really done it yet. He hasn't fully broken out the way a lot of us thought that he was going to. And I think it's still within him, but I don't think that the upside in any particular category is as high with Cruz as it is with Chisholm. I feel like he could beat him in all five categories, honestly.
Jazz, by the way, he, you know, obviously we all know the 40 stolen bases, and you know he was short on power in general. Like it was, this is his first season where, well, first of all, it was the first season where he was healthy for most of the year. Yeah. Granted, he was playing with a little bit of injury towards the end of the season, but he had an isolated power of under 200 for the first time. His barrel rate was a tick under 10% for the first time in his career. So, you know, curious how much of that will come back. Like, what can we really project a Jazz Chisholm for? O'Neal Cruz, remember there was a time where all of a sudden everybody in the main event was pushing him up into like the third round. Like it was just, it was wild.
Yeah.
He had the seventh most strikeouts in baseball last season. He had a 30% rate. He's hitting the ball hard. It was like a 95 exit velocity, 16% barrel. He was just, you know, crushing the ball. So it's one of those, like, you know, you got to kind of figure your risk, right? Like if you, you know, you really need to have Buxton and Adele later in your draft or something like that. Let's just say you're, you know, crazy. Like then you probably don't want an O'Neal Cruz as well and a Royce Lewis and that type of thing. So kind of risk balance.
Yeah. Just going back and forth between them, like with O'Neal Cruz, the data is ridiculous. The barrel rates, the hard hit rates, everything, but 22 home runs. I mean, this guy should be close to a 40 home run hitter until he actually proves it to me over a full season. And I mean, he wasn't bad this year, but he was a disappointment where Jazz actually did meet that value. I feel like with Cruz, he kind of has to prove it to me first, where Jazz now, especially in New York, kind of has crossed over that hump of, yeah, I think he is more of a superstar fantasy player, where with Cruz, it could happen, but especially in Pittsburgh, I'm really not expecting it to happen. I think he's going to be good, but I don't think he's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back to this like little period of time for like, you know, 1 week where I was just like in on the early part of the Pittsburgh lineup. I'm like, what am I thinking? But like, you know, Ke'Bryan Hayes and Brian Reynolds and O'Neal Cruz. I'm like, man, this is going to be awesome. Like, let's get it. You know, Justin Mason thought that as well. Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, maybe this upcoming season. Nevermore. A couple of morons, Paul Sporer is correct. Real quick, let's talk about three guys that were out in 2024. These are starting pitchers. One of them is Shane McClanahan. Shane McClanahan has ADP right now of around 120. He had his TJ in August. You've got Sandy Alcantara, an ADP in the 170s right now. He had his TJ in October. Both are supposed to be good to go coming up. And then Brandon Woodruff did not have TJ, but he had the anterior capsule, shoulders beat up. All three guys are supposed to be good to go. His ADP right now is around 200. So if they're looking good, they're in spring, those guys are all going to be soaring. I mean, we don't even know to what levels, right? Like if you know McClanahan is good to go, velocity's back up, he can be back up there in the second, third round range, you know, why not, right?
This is what we mentioned earlier. If you want to get some of these later pitching deals, McClanahan at 120 When I first saw that, I started doing some research. Was there some kind of setback or anything? Like, I think he is going to be back for opening day. And this is a guy who is a legitimate ace. He's showed us that he's a legitimate ace. Now, how much does the injury complicate things? I think he's healthy. And I think if you are able to get him at this range, he would be, even though you have to pay up more for him than you would for Alcantara or Woodruff, Sandy's very volume-based. The strikeouts aren't quite there. The team context is lousy, as we know. And with Woodruff, until we see him throwing and until we see that shoulder in action again, he makes me a little bit nervous, even though the price is very good. And you got a quote here on the outline from Brandon Woodruff, which is kind of promising. He thinks he'll be the strongest that he's been in his career because he's had a whole year off to get his body correct. You know, we've been led astray listening to players in the past. He might think he is as good as he's ever been, but until he's actually throwing, you just don't know. And I feel like with McClanahan being, I believe, the youngest of the group there, especially with the talent that he's shown, is, you know, he has a higher ceiling than any of these three guys, I think, as well. I think even with the few round difference, he'd have to be the lean at this point for me.
Is there anyone here in the audience that would like to come up and has a strong opinion about one or any three of these? Please come up and tell me, would you come on up? Nick Pollock from Pitcherless, come on up. Tell us if you were doing a draft champions draft, all the mics should be working. You're doing a draft champions. Just say you're doing a 50-round draft and hold, and you have to lock them in now. Yeah. Who would you take?
Between? Those three?
Those three. Alcantara.
Kevin Clanahan all day.
Yeah.
One of the things I really love are lefties with elite changeups. And we saw that with Reagans this year. We saw that with Scooble this year. Tyler Anderson was actually good because he had an elite changeup from a left side. And what's going to happen? Hey, everyone, what's up? what's going to happen is Shane McClanahan is going to look great in March. And everyone's going to go, oh, man, okay. Yep, this is Shane McClanahan. Yes, he's not going to go 200 innings because it's the Rays and also coming back from this. But generally when you have Tommy John, you should pretty much put like 140, 150. That's like what we've seen constantly. And considering that, I don't know, 150 is the new 200 when it comes to starting pitchers, I will take that all day. I really don't see this going as – I just think it's going to be great. With Woodruff, the shoulder is – shoulders that remove you for a year – are more risky to me. Mm-hmm. And with Alcantara, you nailed it, Joe. He's a volume guy. So, and we got Casey Bubba. Why? Oh, no, I don't want this. We don't have much data on this kind of thing. I know, but that's fine. I think that's, I mean, we don't have data on a lot of this stuff. So it's, I'm okay with it after the second one. If they're fine, then they're fine. Everything that we've heard is saying that McClanahan's ready to go.
What about all these guys coming back early also? I mean, and for the most part, okay, right? Like it used to be,
right?
It was like a 17th, 18th month point at which, you know, it was like the Wainwright factor at which we can gauge them. All the guys like Robbie Ray and Jeffrey Springs, guys are coming back at the 12, 13 month point and seeming to be okay.
I think it's almost a tongue-in-cheek argument, but also I haven't heard a really great argument against it, that we have so many elbows exploding. So give me the guy with the one who just repaired his.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I is that crazy to say that? Like, that makes a little, right? And so I think, all right, McClanahan, as long as, you know, we have to have the assumption as of right now that he's good to go. Alcantara just threw a 99-mile-per-hour bullpen in September. Yep. I'm going to go after that.
Even with the price difference, that 50 picks doesn't make enough of a difference for you with Sandy?
Oh, no, I'm taking McClanahan first. Yeah. Just to let you guys know, for 12 teamers, which is different, I would be all in on Woodruff, not in your DC and stuff, because at 200, you should assume that guy, whoever you pick at 200, is not on your team by the end of the year. So I'll take Woodruff. If it's good, it's binary, and I can decide early. It stinks, I'm out, and now I can go get Flaherty or Houck the first week of the season. I have that open spot to get it, right? But with McClanahan and Sandy, I have McClanahan at 7 for my top 200 rankings because that's who he is. He's like one of there are only like three guys who could have a 30% K rate with elite ratios.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Pollock, thank you very much. Do you want to stick around for a hitter question?
Actually, yes. What do you got?
Oh, you do? Oh,
yeah. Okay. Go. What do you got?
All right.
What do you got? What do you got?
So we got a few guys that are below, that are now no longer in the top 100.
Yeah.
A bunch of hitters. Is there anyone that stands out for you?
Sport, what do you think?
About what? Anyone inside the top 100? What was?
Well, I'm going to throw out a few names.
Yeah,
that,
please.
Guys that used to be top 100 players that are no longer.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone stand out to you?
Great.
Marcus Simeon.
Yep.
Cody Bellinger.
Yep.
Randy Arozarena. Yep. Adolis Garcia and Christian Yelich.
Well, why wouldn't I know these guys? No, I'm kidding. So Bellinger is actually going back to the Cubs now. I actually think that Bellinger should be able to be fine once again inside the Cubs. I would say that Arozarena, there's a lot of good talk this weekend about him. Just essentially, I believe he's still in Seattle, but then also changing the batter's eye, which should help, I think, that offense overall. I don't know. I mean, I think that's just generally fine. Hitters are weird animals and a lot easier for pitchers because you know what they do and the skills are easier. Spore, what do you think? I trust your opinion.
You know,
more.
Actually, Paul, because you're going to be co-tag teaming with Nick, we're going to be doing a trivia of Beat the Touts, and Spore and Pollock are a team.
Yeah.
And might as well have you come
Fireside
up.
Fireside chat, let's go.
Since that is about to start, might as well have Paul come in and tell us who stands out for you among these hitters.
Can you give me the names
Thank
again?
Thank you.
Can you give me the names again, Vlad? I'm sorry.
Can you give the origin of
country of origin?
Use it in a sentence.
I think I heard Yelich in there. Is this mic on?
Oh, we got Marcus Semien, Cody Bellinger, Arozarena, Adolis Garcia, Christian Yelich, Josh Lowe, and Gleyber Torres.
I can't quit Semien. I'm still in, especially in the fall-winter draft season. Because it's mostly DC season, give me the locked volume. I'm just really not out on him. I really just think it was classic World Series hangover for both the Diamondbacks and the Rangers for pretty much everyone there that just didn't quite come through. They didn't kill you, but they didn't deliver. I talked about it with Gallen this morning on the pitchers panel with Nick. But yeah, I'm still in on Semien. The batter's eye change thing was a very interesting point. I will be staying in tune to that in Seattle because if that happens, I could be in on Arozarena. But right now, I'm no Seattle hitter until I kind of see what's up with that batter eye thing.
By the way, random craziness with Adolis Garcia. And I was actually in on the hangover, so I wasn't buying on the Texas Rangers for the most part at their price points going into the season. But Adolis Garcia, who now has an ADP of 130, talking about like eighth, ninth round, so he had pretty much the same plate appearances as last year, but he hit 15 less home runs and scored 40 less runs. And I was even looking at the, you know, how much of a difference was there, you know, men in scoring position when he was, it was minimal. So it's just crazy. So I'm really into like buying back, bouncing back when these guys have fallen in price.
Right. And it is easy to kind of forget guys like that too. And I got to be honest, you know, I might have that blind spot with someone like Kevin Gausman. I know we're talking hitters, but like he had a big fall down and you don't want to just discard guys with strong track records. I am somebody.
Yes, you do with Kevin Gausman.
I mean, of course, I agree. Like I said, he is somebody that I'm not really interested in, but I'm always careful to just completely run away from them. And Adolis Garcia is somebody I've not been a fan of. You know, we've talked about it with Justin a million times on the pod, but I agree. I think now that the price has come down, that might be a spot where I am interested in just giving him another shot with the power and the speed.
So can we talk about Josh Lowe for a second?
Yeah.
He dealt with a ton of injuries last year.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hamstring, there was a hip, there was a knee, there was literally everything that could have possibly got hurt. 106 games, 10 homers, 25 steals. Nothing too special, but he stole at a higher clip than he did the previous year on like a per game basis. 32 steals in 135, 25 steals in 106 games.
Caught once, by the way.
Caught one time only. Yep. Now, the thing that's going to jump out to people is the strikeout rate. 24 to 31 is a huge jump.
Right.
The swinging strike rate went down. Swinging strike rate went from 14.8 down to 13.9.
What did the walk rate do?
The walk rate actually went up a couple points.
So was he being too passive?
Went from 6.2 to 8.3. So I see Josh Lowe going at pick 180. You're getting a ton of speed. You're getting a guy who could go for 20 home runs again, and you're getting him later than all the other names on this list outside of Gleyber. I feel like Josh Lowe is the most appealing one to me here, especially if I am looking for outfielders. And a lot of the time in this range, I think a lot of us are looking for outfielders. You could be walking into a 2040 season from Josh Lowe here. I think
so. Yeah, I think it's a nice rebuy. I like Josh Lowe. He was somebody I definitely liked kind of pre-breakout, had that huge breakthrough there. I think the skills are definitely still there. And you buy the dip with guys like this. Tyler O'Neill's that type of guy too, where I don't really ever want to buy the upside of them. I want to buy them when they are on the downturn. And I do think somebody like Lowe, I'd be interested in. Help me out here. What am I looking at?
So this is honestly the thing that I do with hitters is we have a thing called Process Plus, which takes like the pitches they see and gives a rating for their decision value. Are they swinging at the right pitches or not? Are they making contact when they do hit those, when they do swing? on pitches that they should or not. And then, of course, how much power they have when they do make contact. It's honestly like the only thing I listen to with hitters, because every single stat that we have applies to one of those three things. And with Josh Lowe, so I just pull it up on our Peel app, and his, oh my gosh, his decisions, his contact, his power all just fell down completely. I don't remember if there was an injury involved.
There was multiples. Joe was highlighting
at that certain time. That might have been it. It was actually above average, closer to getting up to 110 process plus by the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. So I'm in on this. If you're saying that he just got hurt at the end, he slowed down, that could come back up, and then you're overexerting mm-hmm. with those decisions and everything too. Right. So I'm with you. The decision value was actually good at first, and then it got worse. He was swinging at the wrong pitches.
And when we consider he's got a price tag, 12th, 13th round, even if he's a platoon guy, we remember what he did the previous season. You know, it was massive. He was a top 50 player. So mm-hmm. I think he's interesting. The rest of these guys, for the most part, they're aging. They have issues. I mean, you know, Yelich has a back of a, you know, of a 45-year-old. He's 32, whatever. True. So, 34. Last thing before we get into the trivia, last year's rookie disappointments. These are guys that some of us, we bought in Fab three or four times, mm-hmm. like Tyler Black, for example.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Jackson Holliday, he was supposed to be part of that group that, you know, that blew up. He's only 20 years old. He's got an ADP of 215 now. And I'll throw a couple other names in that list. Evan Carter, who was going like 120 last year.
Said he played through injuries he shouldn't have, needs to be better about responding to his own body. Might also have a back of a 45-year-old, but at least understands now that he shouldn't be playing through it so much like Evan Carter did last year.
And two first names. Don't trust him.
He does have two first names.
Two more guys in the mix. Kobe Mayo and then Kyle Manzardo. So as far as those guys, Jackson Holliday's got a higher price point than the rest of them. Kyle Jackson Holliday's around, you know, 200. Mm-hmm. All the other guys are, you know, 300 posts. So among Jackson Holliday, let's take Holliday out of the mix. Kobe Mayo, Evan Carter, Kyle Manzardo, and let's say Victor Scott II and Tyler Black. Who are those guys?
I will say, if you liked any of them this year, you should not be out. There's nothing that any of those guys did this year in their limited samples should be enough to push you out, especially with the price points where they're at. Now, specifically, I was with you on the Black. The fall starts with him. The playing time never really materialized with Milwaukee, but this guy seems like he could be kind of a fantasy juice guy. I'm not saying he would take over the shortstop position, but I don't know that they're going to re-sign Adames. They can move Ortiz over, create an opening for Tyler Black. He's somebody who really appeals to me because I still think that Milwaukee team's going to be good, and he can produce a lot of fantasy value with power, speed, runs, ribbies, all of it there with Tyler Black. So I like him the most.
I'm going to go with Kyle Manzardo. When he came up in September, power plus was insane. He went up to about 120 plus process plus overall, 120 by the end. And this is his first year. You saw the decision value low initially, which is what you expect in the contact low for a guy who's just getting adjusted to the league. It got better as it went on in September with more pitches seen. That means essentially, great, it should get better again in the sophomore year, going in the right direction.
Joe.
I think it's also Manzardo for me. In September, he hit 270, hit five home runs. You know, he started to figure it out. He did start to figure things out. He's a guy who's dealt with some problems in his own. Like he had, I think it was 2023, his mother went through something, and you saw right. The numbers really dip. And I feel like that's something that we don't know how long that's going to stick with you. Some people can bounce back quickly. Some people, the personal stuff does end up affecting them a little bit more. I don't know exactly if that was it, but that's definitely, you can draw a parallel between his kind of down year in 23. Maybe part of that lingered into 24, and then he started to pick it up. He's a former top prospect. I guess he still is considered to be a prospect. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's exhausted that yet.
No, I mean, I don't think he has enough playing time yet.
I don't think he does, and I think that he is going to probably have a good possibility of playing every day in Cleveland. So I think it would be Manzardo for me.
Yeah.
For the prices, I mean, we just got to say to ourselves, we can't be out on any of them. We have right. to be open yeah. to all of them, and that's, you know, we don't even know if they're who's going to be making the team or what's happening. But if you believe, you trust your instincts, you got to go for it. Yay, Lucas.
I just had a quick question for all four people.
Come on up, because you're going to be one of our contestants.
Yeah. Let's give it a round of applause.
Lucas Beery, FTN. Before you ask your question, I need one more person, anyone, just somebody who's going to team up with Lucas. Hold on, let someone pick on their own. Who wants to go? Sam? Okay.
He was already.
Voluntold.
He was going in. He's like, I'll all right. Get him in here.
Sam, how do I come up? Pronounce your full name. Give us your Twitter handle, too, so everybody needs to follow you.
Sam Worship. Yeah, it's at SamFBB1.
Yeah. Give him a follow. Lucas, what's your handle and what's your question?
Yeah, my handle's Lucas Beery 33, but I had a question for all four people because really strong pitcher, but I've kind of figured out is a little divisive, George Kirby. I've heard Nick talk about it, and he's kind of convinced me a little bit to lower my mindset on Kirby a little bit, but just curious what all four people think about him.
Just trying to
The whip is so important.
I love Kirby. I'm a huge fan. That sort of command and control is I'm catnip to me, so I'm very much in on Kirby still. And I believe that there is a chance at development to turn into more of a strikeout guy and kind of evolve into an ace. I truly believe that his full form is ace upside. And it might not be next year, but I'm going to keep drafting George Kirby.
Yeah.
The short version, if you will, sir.
Yeah, I'm with you. Fastball has the number, it's the 100th percentile swing strike rate, but it's also like the second percentile called strike rate. And it drives me nuts. He just needs to have his slider better. It's too much of like, hey, I need to not have walks. And if he actually make that, no, I'm going to get whiffs with this. And also be like, I don't need to throw every fastball in the zone. Mm-hmm. And then I think he's amazing. And the floor is so good that I'm willing to go for that.
Exactly.
Because the ceiling is there.
Joe?
I think that we all ignore whip a lot of the time. There was on the panel I was on a couple days ago, we were looking at whip over the last decade or so, and it's very, very tight. It's either between 1.25 and 1.3 on a league-wide basis. And you're getting somebody with Kirby who is not a guarantee, but essentially a guarantee for a 1.1 whip or lower. He's got still very solid strikeout numbers. He's got an amazing park to pitch in. I have him at number 10 right now in my early rankings, and I feel like I could even maybe push him up another spot or two. I love him personally. I think he's fantastic.
And for myself, who had Kirby as a top four guy, I mean, I ended up with teams with a Kirby-free team that was fine. I mean, my pitching, first of all, it was, you know, it was nearly 15 points and everything. And even the strikeouts were fine because I was able to find them along the way. So it's a good thing to be a whip snob. I think it's obviously much tougher to find. It's a much scarcer category than strikeouts. And by the way, he's got an ADP of 34 now. What's going to happen when, you know, McClanahan is back, when Pablo Lopez starts moving up? All these strikeout guys are going to come up for, you know, and guy like Kirby is going to be dropping down a little bit. All right, trivia time. Woo, let's go. Sam Worshing, Lucas Beery against Paul Spohr and Nick Pollock. All right, let's do this. I got the questions. I got five of them. And the way this works is there are multiple answers for these, all right? And this isn't quite – it's not Family Feud style, but I want the first person to buzz because you get an extra point for it. So here's how it goes. Well, I'll ask the question. Joe will keep score. Whoever buzzes first gets to answer first, and you would get 3 points for that first correct answer. Any other answer after that is 2 points. If you get it wrong, it's minus one.
Love it. All can't right. just spam answers.
All right. First question for you is, since 2021, the last four seasons, there's only one hitter that averages more than 700 plate appearances per season. That is, wait, question. That guy's Marcus Semien.
Damn it.
Oh.
But.
Doesn't he have to answer?
No, not yet, because we haven't finished the question. Then whoever buzzes after
okay,
I finish.
Let's go.
There are four answers to this question. You guys will just accumulate points.
I mean, as I hear Marcus Semien, I get excited.
So you might see where this is going, but so be ready on the quick trigger. There are four more who are averaging more than 680 over those four seasons. Who are those guys? Go ahead, Sam.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is correct.
Correct.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's second. He averaged 696 plate appearances over the last four seasons. All right, you guys are next.
Freddie Freeman?
Freddie Freeman is correct. Freddie Freeman, 693. There are two more guys left on this list. You guys are next answering.
Yeah, he said
Mookie
Betts.
Oh, wait, yeah.
I got put down by my teammates. No. Is that official?
Who's that?
No, they don't know.
Talking to the mic.
They don't know you.
And let's say, all right.
Dansby Swanson?
Not Dansby, so minus one. All right, two more guys here. And at some point, we'll have to, so we don't keep getting negative scores, we'll have to just end it and get to the next question for the sake of time.
All right. Brian Reynolds?
Brian Reynolds is not correct. All right. So now let's go.
We got it wrong. We go.
All right. Everyone got it wrong. All right. We'll go to the next question. The other two. So it's Marcus Semien first, over 700. Vlad Guerrero's next, 696. You've got Freddie Freeman, you mentioned 693. There are two others. You know who it is?
Well, to your credit, Matt Olson, right?
Matt Olson, yeah.
Wow. Good
call. The guy that's played 162 games the last three seasons.
I can't believe that.
Fourth guy is Juan Soto, 685. Oh, sorry, Scott Gilroy had that one.
He was the one.
Yeah. Here's the one.
How many points did I get for Semyon?
Yeah. How many points did I get for Semyon?
Zero. All right. Next question. Question number two. And so you only have to buzz once, whoever is first. Since 2022, the last three seasons, there are six qualified starting pitchers. Qualified. With at least a 315 ERA or lower and a 110 whip or lower. You guys first.
Max Fried.
There's one. He's top of the list.
Oh, let's go.
All right, you guys get the next one.
What was the ERA?
315 or less, and 110 whip or less. Last three seasons.
You say it.
Logan Gilbert.
Logan Gilbert is not on that list.
Go.
Zach Wheeler.
Zach Wheeler is on that list. All right, four more. We got Fried and we've got Wheeler. Those are the top two. Fried had, over the last three seasons, a 280 ERA, the only one under three, and a 110 whip. Wheeler had a 301 ERA, a 102 whip. You got four other guys. One guy's coming off TJ. One guy went from the NL to the AL.
Corbin Burns.
Corbin Burns is correct.
Okay.
There we go.
Oh, composite.
All right, you guys, your guys turn to answer?
Yeah.
Garrett Cole.
Garrett Cole is correct. Back to you guys until you each get one wrong, then we'll end this question. Yeah. One more shot. One might be on the brink of retirement as well. Sam and Lucas, thinking it over, going to give us an answer. Six qualified starting pitchers. ERA lower than 315, whip lower than 110 over the last three seasons.
We should have had the Jeopardy music ready.
For each season.
Just that's their total over the three. That's their average over the last three seasons. Yeah. Last chance.
Is there a thing?
If you pass, then you just don't lose a point, so that's good.
Yeah, that's
all right.
Pass.
Yeah. All right, but these guys get a chance to get two points. Your last shot.
Let's go with Zach Eflin.
Zach Eflin, no. Minus point there.
After my own heart.
You got right. Corbin Burns is third. Justin Verlander,
fourth. Oh, we thought
fourth.
Of that, too.
309, 106. Sandy Alcantara, 311, 108.
But how did he qualify Alcantara?
He did.
How?
Minimum 400 innings pitch when you sort by the 3 years.
That's, that was
he was at like 220.
And Garrett Cole. All right. Okay, next question. Question number three. This is quite the battle here. Actually, we'll do the scoring afterwards. It'll be a surprise. All right.
Okay, I love that.
All right, here we go. Who were the out of 68 qualified starting pitchers in 2024, there were four of them with a whip of 140 or higher. Who are those four? Paul and Nick.
Charlie Morton?
No, 136. Yeah. Close.
Patrick Corbin?
Patrick Corbin's correct.
Dang, good one.
Chris Flexen?
No.
Oh, wow, he's saying.
Dragon would be a long night.
I thought it'd be enough stats.
Freeland?
Sorry.
Kyle Freeland? No, that's not correct. Didn't qualify. All right, we'll do one more if you guys want, or you can pass and not lose points.
Oh,
hey, we got some help in the back from Justin long. Mason.
That's
Scooter,
Jeanette.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
who just?
I know, but I'm always so positive. Okay,
four pitchers. One surprise you, one will not.
All right, I'll pass.
We'll chicken out. We'll pass and not lose a point.
I don't want to waste some more time.
All right, so the worst ERA among those 68 qualified, Patrick Corbin with a 1.5.
Whip.
Sorry. The next worst was Chris Bassett, 1.46.
Oh, Bassett.
After that was Mackenzie Gore, a 1.42. And then the last guy with a 1.4 whip was the worst fantasy value among all starting pitchers and literally bottom 2 percentile across the board. Griffin Canning, new Atlanta Brave.
Yeah. Right. Brave's new ace.
That's so funny.
All right. Question number four.
I demoted.
I just trust.
What were the four largest single fab bids in the 2024 main event? All four went for over $500.
Are you asking player or money?
A player.
Okay.
You're asking like the fab biz of a player.
Yeah, the fab, not, who the player was. Yeah, not the player.
Our guy Todd Whitestone of Ken had an article. And he had this thing called the wow bid. Okay. So it was kind of like the big spend.
We were first.
Yeah, you guys hit the buzzer before, so you guys go first. Sam and Lucas.
Christian Scott
is correct.
But there's one. First.
We were first.
But you buzzed before the question was done.
Sorry. We deserve that.
Yeah, but you guys get the next one.
I'm impatient.
You go.
James Wood.
James Wood did not crack the 500 mark. Not one of the four.
Too late, I guess, to come up.
That's all right. Back to you guys, Sam and Lucas.
We're gonna pass.
All right,
we got 3 points
here
for our first answer, okay. So we're good.
Here we go. Paul and Nick.
Yes, I think so. Oh. But we can say it.
All right,
go for
it. Was there any skeins out there?
There were no.
Okay,
it wasn't skeins.
I didn't think so.
I'll give you a clue. So and you guys can each then after this take a stab each. One was a veteran who was dropped. A veteran who was dropped from the AL is a hitter from the NL East.
I'm trying to guess.
And then the other two were rookies as well, like Christian Scott.
No. Oh, Nimmo?
Nimmo. You knew that. Good job.
That's hot.
Brandon Nimmo.
And oh, that's Lucas Berry.
You guys get one more shot.
That's
Jackson
Holliday.
Not Jackson Holliday. Jeez. So
I'm losing points.
The top highest paid bids for in the main event, someone spent $677 on Christian Scott. That did not work out. The next highest, you won't believe this, the week of a lifetime, Reese Hines. Is it Hines or
Reese
Hines?
Reese
Hines. $609. It's almost like $609.
You're just making up names.
$609 on Reese Hines.
You got one, Mike? Kowser? No, Kowser not
that's
top 500.
That's a good guess.
Brandon Nimmo was correct. He went for $578 when someone dropped him. The fourth guy, Noelvi Marte, former somebody picked him 1-1 in a fantasy draft.
So that's
this
the
past
way season. I meant Noelvi to say Marte. That yesterday for Family Feud as like the 1-1. Okay, that's fine.
All right, the very final question here. Can we get a tally on the score? Where
we're
at?
See what we need.
You guys want to do it?
See what we need.
I don't want to hear
okay,
a tally.
So
fireside chat.
Lucas and Sam are at 10 points. The Fireside Chat Boys are at 2 points.
Oh, jeez. We're in trouble.
You need a big round.
Right.
You need a big round.
Pivotal question of the lifetime, and it's great because this question is about the lifetime, of baseball here. So Rudy Gamble, if you know of him, of Razzball, he created an awesome tool that ranks the best roto seasons of all time.
Oh, God.
And this one, of course, is tricky because, you know, the Bonds, McGuire, those days, there were a lot of good hitters. So, of course, the roto values in terms of, you know, the whole pool, the whole field. So you really have to be an outlier standing out. So my question to you is, who had the 5 best fantasy seasons of all time, roto 5x5?
Barry Bonds.
No, sorry.
No.
Not Barry Bonds.
Okay.
Ricky Henderson?
Not Ricky Henderson either.
Wow.
I'll give you a clue now that you guys have both gone. Two of them are very recent, and 3 of them were before our lifetime.
Acuña 2023.
That is correct. Acuña earned $71.40 per their player rater.
Shohei this year?
And Shohei this year, yeah. Correct. He's the best fantasy season of all time. Roto value, $72.80. So,
what was the other clue?
The other clue. The three other three were before our lifetime.
Oh.
So, where are we with the points?
Norm Cash.
How close are they now?
1961.
So it's gotten farther apart.
It's gotten further apart. Okay. All right. Well,
you need
anyone in the crowd other than who's not Razzball affiliated? No.
I just thought it'd be fun.
Who knows? Oh well, yeah. Tell us who.
Honus Wagner.
Honus Wagner is correct.
Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth is the fourth, and we got a fifth.
Ted Williams.
No, he was actually it was close, I think.
Ty Cobb in 1909, 65-50.
Man, they had some really good roto leagues at that time.
Those leagues were popping.
Oh, my gosh. You have no idea.
Oh, yeah, totally came through for you.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us on the game. Congratulations, Sam and Lucas.
Right, we were winners.
I am 0-2 in trivia games this weekend.
And we fashion ourselves trivia.
No, I don't.
Oh, I do.
Mr. Joe, how did it feel to do your first live podcast?
It was fantastic. It's a blast. I've got to hope to do one again next year because it's a whole different beast than just sitting at home on my computer on a Zoom or a StreamYard. You got the live audience. It's fantastic. I can't thank you enough for bringing me up here, Vlad. It's been a great treat.
My pleasure, Joe. Rising star Joe Errico. Please give it up for Joe. Everyone, hope everyone's enjoying First Pitch Arizona. I hope you have enjoyed this live podcast. I hope you subscribe and listen to us all season long. We're going to provide the goods, everything all year long. So for Joe Orrico, for our standard co-host, our Jason Anthony, for Jason Anthony, who's usually the host, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.